Hey, and welcome to Too Much Scrolling for January 8th, 2014. I'm your host, Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Essenplan.
And we're here to talk about some things that are interesting to us, and hopefully they're interesting to you. If you have any interest in what we're saying, there's great ways to find out more information. We prefer Google.
Google?
Google's a great way to find out information,
We like Google. Google's good for us.
If you want to know anything about us or anything about yourself...
If you don't, they'll know you, right?
That's right. Google knows all, sees all. We have some things to talk about today. The first thing that we want to talk about are movies. We love watching some good movies. Our movie of the week this week is The Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
That's going to be a good movie. I'm surprised it didn't come out earlier this year, or the summer, like when all the blockbusters came out. But what do you know? We're right in the middle of the summer. Things are starting to slow down, and we get this type of movie that comes out.
Yeah, they pushed it back at least a week, seeing the Transformers coming out on July 4th. The July 4th movie this year, I think, is the Transformers movie.
Did you see that?
I have not seen that. Have you?
I have not. It's not. I tried to sit through the first one,
and you didn't make it.
I didn't make it through the first one. I can make it through any movie, but the Transformers was
not sort of thing.
No, it's just a little past me, and just I can nerd out on everything, but Transformers was not. I was not going to go there.
All right, but the Planet of the Apes. Are you a big fan of the franchise?
I am a big fan of the franchise. I mean, I was a kid when. Well, I was a kid when. Probably like 72, 73, or 74. I probably saw the first one, and they were just scary. Yeah. And I remember the television program, and Mom had to sit with me as I watched it because I was scared of the apes.
And now the apes are even more terrifying. They're all CGI, and you look at them, and you have no idea how somebody could be in a monkey suit and be on the Planet of the Apes.
This is incredible. The graphics look really good, and the story, I enjoyed the story mm-hmm. from the first part of this movie. And in fact, I really enjoy the revisiting the worlds. If we go back to like the original series with Charlton Heston and the follow-ups, you know, we got what was the best of the graphics at the time, the best of the storytelling techniques at the time. But what we have right now is just, I mean, you can dream it, you can make it.
Absolutely.
And we've gotten to the point where, you can tell any type of story. And this is a reimagining of that world. In the original series, we never got what caused everything. And the first movie of this gave us what caused it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get this part that should tell us a little bit about how it changed their reality, their world. We've talked a little bit about. Did you see the latest trailer of it? The one that before they released the movie.
This is one of those movies where I've actually avoided all trailers. Don't want to know the things that are constantly spoiled in trailers on certain movies. I love trailers. For those movies that I don't know anything about.
Okay.
For something like The Planet of the Apes that I'm so psyched to go see on Friday when it opens, I really have absolutely avoided all media on this movie. I've seen a poster. I know that there's an ape that rides a horse.
Well, then I won't tell you about it then. But I'll talk about is that the few people who look like they have seen it. Oh, I should say that HollywoodChicago.com had a preview of the movie on Monday, and I got my offer. I had to drive downtown.
Okay.
Once in a while, they'll let me drive to Schaumburg, and if I go to Schaumburg to see a movie, then I'm all for it. But anyway, they're usually the preview, and you're there, and the whole goal of a preview movie is to allow you to come in and see it and then spread the word that it was like the greatest movie ever. I'm not going to drive downtown Chicago for just that. But I do plan on seeing it Friday. The Rotten Tomatoes website, there must have been some people who have seen this movie. They have given it a 95% fresh. There's only a few people maybe 20 people who have seen it. I don't see any of the big newspapers there yet.
Right.
But people are pretty good at trashing movies that are not good.
I have hung my hat on Rotten Tomatoes reviews for a few years now. That is my go-to for reviews to see if I really want to see a movie or not. Mm-hmm. That's why I haven't seen the new Transformers movie. The Rotten Tomatoes score on that was 17%.
Was it really?
17%.
And I didn't have to see that to know that.
Right, right. Right. There are some movies that you know are going to be good movies. The storyline of the Planet of the Apes is such an amazing political look into what we are doing. It is such a mirror of our lives, always has been. The idea of what we're doing to different people was very interesting in the last movie, The Rise of the Planet of the Apes, where we saw the different people being treated differently. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the politics of the dawn of the Planet of the Apes, the power struggle between the warring group and the peaceful group.
I think that you've hit on something. Some people either get older and adopt, they tend to adopt a number of views. And the older I get, the more I recognize that there are lots of different types of people. And I want there to be lots of different types of people. And they can live their lives, and they don't have to be me, and I don't have to be them. I don't have to stop them. As long as they're not hurting somebody.
Right.
Then I don't need to stop them. But that's the reason why Comic-Con does as well as it does, and that's the reason why other types of conventions and, mm-hmm. you know, all sorts of clubs are out there. Some people like airplanes. Some people like books. Some people like, you know, you name it. And I've become very, very liberal on that part of the world. And I think we're going to get a story that talks a little bit about that, how a group can basically push around other groups, mm-hmm. and force a narrative that creates a picture and creates the drama that makes the movie, is what we're going to see.
I just love a good story. I love it when an author can write an allegory to our lives and put it into context. I mean, that's what Gene Roddenberry did with Star Trek. He was writing a space opera, a space western, and putting in all of these messages about our current condition, and everyone accepted those messages because it was, you know, it was a space show.
Sure.
Don't worry about it. Same thing with the Planet of the Apes. A lot of people look at the Planet of the Apes and go, oh, it's a movie about apes.
Damn dirty apes.
And a lot of people don't see the real message in those movies. And that's pretty exciting for me that's going to be here on Friday.
Well, I think you've hit it. I enjoy the revisiting of the world. A few years ago, there was the Battlestar Galactica,
mm-hmm.
the reimagining of the Battlestar Galactica world. And as a kid, the Battlestar Galactica was a kind of a ripoff, mm-hmm. of Star Wars.
No question.
Maybe a light version of maybe a Mormon view of how the world worked. And it was light. I shouldn't say it was light.
It was. It didn't have that heavy political message. Absolutely.
Made on it for television.
Correct.
Definitely made for television. And the current version, which basically you can make any world you want to, was, oh man, it truly was like desperation, mm-hmm. and the world has come to an end, and you could just feel the panic and the stress, right. and they're tired and all that was going on. And then it became successful, and as many things do, you had a whole group of writers who said, we have to build a, we got to complete this.
Right.
And you got hit and miss at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But it was wonderful. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't watch a lot of television, but because of what we can do today, oh, we can revisit all those great stories in the past.
Absolutely. All of those movies that were fantastic 30 years ago can be made fantastic again, and even more so. Again, the new Battlestar Galactica, mm-hmm. the allegory of religion in mm-hmm. in those episodes was amazing. The allegory of politics there, the power struggle in this desperate situation.
Sure.
Fantastic way to look at our world through the mirror of that world.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff.
I agree. We need more. More. In fact, they're even talking about, maybe a year ago, they were talking about another version of Battlestar Galactic coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you ever see John Carter of Mars?
I that's one that I tried to get through, and I wasn't actually able to sit through John Carter of Mars. That is a very old story mm-hmm. that was remade in the Disney tradition, and boy, did it flop in the box office.
Well, it sounds like there was a lot of politics behind that.
Yeah.
From the Disney side on whether they would market it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they did real well. I think time will be very kind to this movie, and it may... we talked a little bit about Evergreen. It may be able to come back and create a little world of its own. I mean, people will follow it.
It is possible.
And the other thing it could become is like the latest of the Shawshank Redemption, where it becomes the TBS story of the week. Where
we all
love it because you get sucked into this movie and pretty soon you've got half your... Oh, well, it's starting again. Maybe I'll just...
Watch it again. It's the Shawshank Redemption. How can you go wrong?
Followed by The Green Mile and what would be the other? Roadhouse.
There you go.
In the season, in the evening with Roadhouse.
And that's what cable's for. Watching those movies from 20 years ago that you didn't quite like to begin with. But there you go. It does bring us to our book of the week, our Book It. This week, I chose The Martian by Andy Weir. I just finished that one a few days ago. It's about an astronaut who goes to Mars, the first humans to touch Mars. And unfortunately, there's a terrible accident when they first get there, and a huge sandstorm threatens all of their lives and knocks out the communications array.
And this is written, you were telling me, from a... maybe you know, a true story type of thing. This is not a grandeur talk. This is today we sent a rocket up and a person landed on Mars. This is the sort of scientific way of how it would go.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is from a one-man perspective because that communications array that gets knocked down in the wind, it goes through one of the astronauts. And since there's a giant windstorm, the rest of the crew decides they need to evacuate. So they get into their rocket ship and they blast off, seeing that this man has been pierced by the communications array through the most amazing, strange list of consequences. The man survives and is the abandoned only human on the planet Mars. And he needs to survive for a total of 4 years before the next rocket ship arrives, and he knows that, and he's in a desperate situation. It is from a science perspective. He is a botanist, and okay. He does know what he needs to do in order to survive. He needs to get air and water. Those are his two big goals.
Did he talk a little bit about the soil and what would grow in it with given the right amount of oxygen? And
very much so. Since the character happens to be a botanist, that's one of the first things he goes about doing is modifying the Martian soil, just like we would if we were going to try to live on Mars for any length mm-hmm. of time. We would have to grow crops. So he starts modifying the Martian soil. Unfortunately, since the Martian atmosphere is a vacuum, he has to do that inside of his habitat that he has on Mars.
What about sunlight? Would they talk a little bit about that, about whether there would be... Is it sunlight, maybe like how the Earth has sunlight, to be able to provide, I guess, photosynthesis and all that other fun stuff?
They really don't touch on photosynthesis as much. Okay. Photosynthesis, as far as I know, as not a botanist, could happen in somebody's basement given the right light sources.
And the right amount of power that, Google will be happy to find you with.
That's right. Google will be happy to tell you how much power you're using, and the authorities will be happy to find the people who are using just a little bit too much power in their basements to grow things.
We're recreating the book The Martian. Come on.
That's right.
What do you think we're doing here?
We're starving. These plants.
This is not Colorado.
This is some medical experiment. It is really a fantastic book. I really do suggest that you find a copy of The Martian. It is Andy Weir's first book. He self-published it, which is kind of an interesting point.
Yes.
We live in a time now with the internet where you and I can sit around my house with a microphone and we can make a radio show. If you had words that you wanted to type out, you could certainly type them out and self-publish.
Well, in fact, I think that's going to be the future. Is going to be that if you are a magician, if you're a musician,
if you are a musical magician,
or if you're a writer, or if you're an artist, or something of that nature, mm-hmm. and you want to get your work out there,
mm-hmm.
You've got to be able to show that you can put together whatever deadline, you can put together a story. Maybe it needs editing, maybe it needs tightening, but you can show that you are marketable. And I'm assuming that's going, and you're going to hook up at some point with a company that will say, well, you did well by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us can't be J.K. Rowling. Because you did so well by yourself, we're, at the beginning, excuse me, I should say, that they'll take you and they will try to market to a larger audience.
Right.
And you're going to be... It's going to be very flat as far as being able to get that information. I don't know how many layers of management you could throw out there.
How different is that from how artists and writers and musicians have done business in the past?
Well, I mean, in Canada, because... In fact, I just had this conversation. In Canada, because you have to have so many Canadian artists on radio, they will sign artists... And they will develop you. You can, I mean, just like old school, like in the 70s, where you get 3 or 4 albums and they work on your sound. You may come out with, you know, a hard edge, and then you come out with a pop song,
mm-hmm.
and the pop seems to resonate with everyone, so they'll continue that. And that's strictly because they're required to have so many, you know, of an hour's worth of music. We have to have half that has to be Canadian artists, that type of thing. Which is totally different than what we're dealing with right now when you're dealing with, what is it, Psy, Gangnam Time, or, you know, Carly Rae Jepsen last summer had Call Me Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the trick is not that first song. The trick is whether they can make that whole last for a whole summer.
Right.
But the trick is if they can bring you with a second song.
That's right. Those one-hit wonders. That's not a new concept either.
Yeah, but you also could be dropped as quickly mm-hmm. as that you're given that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it works in all other industries too. My industry, it's the same. But anyway, I think that Andy, from what you were saying, definitely was a very talented person who wrote an engaging story
mm-hmm.
that somebody ran across and was able to get to you.
He was self-published, like I said. It took quite a few years between when he published that first version of that book to finding a publisher who was willing to put it out there in a larger, broader sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was picked up by that publisher, it was also optioned for a film. 20th Century Fox's optioned the story for a movie almost immediately. I put in a call to one of my friends who reads books and scripts for movie companies,
uh-huh.
and he said, yeah, that's how it works. You get a good story out there. As long as enough people find out about it, somebody's going to option it for a film. They may never make a film with it.
Sure.
It may sit on the shelf forever, but the production companies like to buy up those properties as fast as they possibly can.
And then they buy the right for a period of time?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. Well, that sounds good. You mean to introduce my... this book that I... All right, so it's summertime, And I tend to read things that are much deeper. I shouldn't say deeper. But that interests me quite a bit. They don't interest a lot of people. But you know, every once in a while, what you want to do is you want to light read. And light reads are very important because you're at the pool and you can pay attention and you can plow through them and all of a sudden you do. But you know, I'm certainly not my wife. I'm not your wife.
No.
I am a, I'm a man. And being a man, of course, there are things that I'm interested in. And so I picked up a book called How to Fight Presidents, Defending Yourself Against the Badasses Who Ran This Country. By a gentleman named Daniel O'Brien. And what I like so much about this book is Dan is from a different generation than I am. He's probably 10 to 15 years younger than I am. He is a comedy writer. He writes for Cracked.com, which is a very funny website. It's based on an old comic strip or comic book from that was Newsstand.
It was the competitor to Mad Magazine.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And at some point, publishing is went crazy, and somebody bought the name. And about 10 years ago or so, the group that bought this name started putting together articles. And these articles online are meant to be read very quickly, maybe one or two pages long, full of interested tidbits, lots of quirky writing and just humor, but you know, also there to, it's kind of like a bathroom reader. You basically go in there and you learn a whole bunch of things that that you may add questions for. But anyway, this one, the premise of this book is, all right, so there may be people that are very good at running the economy. There are people who are very good at doing all sorts of things as president. But, you know, what would you have to do to win in a fight against all the presidents?
So this is How to Fight Presidents is actually fisticuffs. This is a book about actually...
This is, if you were a video game and you had to, you know, you're playing Donkey Kong and you are... You know, Mario, you got the big monkey up there. You know, this is, you know, one-on-one. Or what is the ones where they used to fight each other?
Mortal Kombat, my friend.
This is Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat the book. But the other characters are presidents, dead presidents of the United States of America.
Which is very important to mention because no live president. So, all right, so we can fight, we eventually fight at the end Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
But we do not fight Jimmy Carter.
Okay.
We do not fight the first Bush. We don't fight W. And we don't fight Clinton. And we don't fight Obama. And that has to do, I have to guarantee, it has to do that they're living, and there's probably some...
There's probably some law people who would sue, and there's probably some rule about fighting presidents
not
that
mentally.
You cannot... You can't...
But the first the introduction to this book is fascinating because he just lays it out on the table. He says to be president, you have to be crazy, and I'm not talking about you have to be institutionalized, but there is something inherent in you that is not of the average person.
Normal, not normal. That's correct. That's that drive that not only presidents and politicians have, but business people. There's something in there that makes you do those things. Donald Trump comes to mind.
Correct. But that definition has changed over time. Right now, it could be sort of an ego-driven type of thing. Mm-hmm. But when we were talking about the first presidents, and building those up, this was a these are people who are adventurers. They you know, one of the comments about George Washington was that he wrote how he enjoyed battles. He didn't necessarily I mean, he likes to win, but like everyone else would win, but there was an exhilaration to the bullets whizzing by him.
Wow.
And he would...
Was he from Chicago?
No.
Okay.
But he was, you know, not particularly skilled. I can't say this. I don't have enough information. But from the book, what I got from it is that he really ultimately felt that God had given him a divine shine. I mean, that's what I'll use, a shine on him, that he would enter everything and exit everything because it was sort of the will
of the Lord.
And, gotcha. And that's the reason why he survived all this.
Wow.
And he went and, you know, he well, it's
Fox could make this into a 1-hour drama, I think. I think there could be a...
This is totally History Channel. I'm going to go, this is totally History Channel. And the reason why it's totally History Channel is in between...
You don't see a Kiefer Sutherland playing a George Washington?
No. I see in between, like, Ancient Aliens and some other, like, Pawn Stars or whatever. Okay. You know, this is just, you know, right in the history. The History Channel's mantra of you know, it's not really history. It's just...
It's no longer history. It's historical, but it's no longer history.
Isn't that mythology? That was from Anchorman. But, the best stories are, of course, of the extreme people. And the extreme people are Andrew Jackson, who... he was asked by... He joined the military when he was really young, maybe 18 years old. Maybe less than that. I can't remember what it was. Oh, he was 13 years old. Here we go. He was 13 years old. A British... he was captured, and a British soldier asked him to shine his shoes. Well, he didn't, so the soldier, like, beat him.
Wow.
And so he had... he was injured. He ended up walking some massive time. Oh, let's see. He had smallpox. He had a head wound. And he just was a spiteful, spiteful man. And you just recognize he was, I mean, he was a man's man.
Sure.
Of like, I am brawn and you will not force me to do anything. And, oh man, he was a tough, tough dude.
Wow.
So in the middle of the book, they design your A-team, as in like the old television show, the A-team. And you get to choose your... you know, your loose cannon and your...
Isn't that more of a Mission Impossible sort of a scenario?
Of
because
course.
I don't remember the A-Team being a chosen group. I mean, that was it. They were the A-Team. Okay. Mission Impossible, he always had to go through the book and go, well, I don't know. Should we get that guy this time? Well, he's kind of a dork. All right, let's move on to... Oh, there's the main character. We'll pick him.
Well, what they're doing is you're picking out your team to go accomplish the impossible goals, and you have your choice of choosing. So you have like 6 or 7 positions you have to have in your little army.
Okay,
and you get to choose between a president or a Roosevelt. So always the answer is you can choose like whoever, you know, one of the other presidents.
Or Roosevelt.
Or Roosevelt. But the Roosevelt you choose is Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, only Teddy Roosevelt.
Well, you know,
it's not just a Roosevelt. Eleanor is out.
Eleanor is out. Well, they were very kind to FDR in this.
Okay.
Because they talked about all the things he did. He had polio and couldn't walk. And
sure.
Also. But he swam an incredible amount. And FDR did a lot to make sure that he was physically fit.
Hmm.
Oh, give me a second. Let me give you... Who was the person? Oh, I think it was John Quincy Adams. I learned in this. John Quincy Adams, in the morning, what he enjoyed doing was stripping naked.
Who doesn't?
Oh, I'm telling you. There must have been some German blood in him somewhere.
All right.
Stripping naked and like swimming the Potomac. And then walking through the gardens, contemplating like how to solve whatever world problems. If I'm wrong on that, I'm sorry. But anyway, I think it was John Quincy Adams.
I don't think he's listening.
Oh, but it was... I'm telling you, you get all these little interesting tidbits. Andrew Jackson was... someone tried to assassinate him. He took the bullet and then took his club, you know, and just beat the mess out of the guy.
Wow.
And, I mean, just all these... and the more you get into it, you get into Lyndon Johnson, who is just, I won't spoil that part, but let's just say that Lyndon Johnson had some conquests he liked to accomplish, and there was a certain way he liked to negotiate with you.
Wow.
And because he enjoyed negotiating this way, he made you feel inferior to him.
And the title of that book again?
Is How to Fight Presidents, Defending Yourself Against the Badasses Who Ran This Country by Daniel O'Brien.
So those are our two books of the week on our book list, our book it. We move on to our app of the week, our app appropriate or appetite. I haven't decided yet what the name of this segment's going to be. I think appetite might be the right way, because I think we all, now that we're in the midst of the 21st century and we all walk around with a supercomputer in our pocket ready to pilot the space shuttle at any given moment.
Slightly more powerful than the space shuttle.
Slightly more powerful than the space shuttle. I think that's the byline. I think that's what we should call that computer in our pocket. But we all have these apps. We have apps that we share with friends and that we have use of each day. My pick of the week is Waze, spelled W-A-Z-E. That's one app that I use absolutely every day. Every time I get into an automobile, I use Waze. It is my navigation system. It's a crowdsourced traffic system where it recognizes how fast I'm going because I'm in my car and reports that back to the hive where everybody else can.
Mr. Fodor, you seem to have arrived at school a little bit fast today. We'll send you this ticket.
and there you go. You've discovered the problem with Waze is the idea of big data is terrifying. The idea of big data collecting all of this information about us can theoretically one day be used against us in a court of law.
Exactly. So tell me again where you were.
Right.
Well, according to Waze, your phone was...
and because we live in the 21st century and your phone represents you in so many different ways right now, there's very little separation between your phone and you.
Sure.
It's very, very difficult to prove that you were not with your phone at 7 o'clock last Friday night.
We just happened to turn on the camera and we saw you.
That's right. And with the new Touch ID on the Apple iPhone 5S, you have a fingerprint proof that you were with your phone at that time. So yeah, that's the frightening side of it.
All right, so let's talk about some of the good things.
Let's talk about some of the good things.
Because as your life quickly enters the 1984 realm, and you didn't work out today. We noticed that by your phone. One of the things that I was reading was on Forbes. There's an article on how in Brazil they were using this app to determine. All right, so the game just ended.
Yeah. Soccer. We're talking about football here.
Football.
Football in Brazil. The World Cup. All right.
How many cabs?
Mm-hmm.
How many trains? How to get, what the traffic is like. On some level, it may be able to tell you is the crowd a happy crowd or is it a sad crowd? As we just saw, Brazil didn't quite show up playing against Germany. So maybe that has an impact. Maybe they determine some future time that more accidents happen. So we need more police officers or more emergency vehicles available.
The emotional state of the crowd playing into the traffic.
Oh, isn't that nuts?
Wow.
So the article, it's owned by Google.
Waze was purchased by Google almost a year ago now.
And so the article talked about how... Waze divides you, the person, from the data.
Correct.
So you are an anonymous person who we know who you are.
Who just happens to go to your address every night around 7 o'clock, stay there for about 10 hours, and then go to your place of work.
You're anonymous.
A totally anonymous
person.
They
don't know who you are.
They don't know who lives at that address.
But you are that person. You could be that person. You may be that person. But... anyway, it talks about how they could use that data for what I was just describing. How to, do we turn on, have fewer roads, but turn on roads to empty out better?
Mm-hmm.
This goes back to a conversation we had a while ago about Nest.
Mm-hmm. Also owned by Google, by the way.
Owned by Google. Nest is very, says over and over, well, nothing has changed, or your data is your data, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And we get that.
But we know where you live and when you are there and when you're not.
That's right. You're home and you're away. just happens to be coincidence, but it's it may be you, it may not be you.
Right.
But the idea is how your ComEd, which is our company, could use that information, mm-hmm. like, oh, it's getting warmer in your area, mm-hmm. so we need more electricity geared towards your area. Mm-hmm. Or it's, you know, it's cooling down this evening, so we will set up our systems to lower around that time. So this metadata could be useful in trying to anticipate services needed. And that really is wild when you can think about it. You don't have to guess at it. You can learn over time. It is... The frightening part of it is, it's truly the 1984 part of it.
Absolutely.
That it's, you no are question. Anonymous, but it's you.
You are anonymously living in your home and going to your place of work. Absolutely. We have no idea who you are at that address.
But you happen to arrive there.
Every night at 7 o'clock.
We noticed that you went to bed right at this time because you no longer played with your phone.
Right. Your phone is no longer in use after this time and at this address.
I know why you're not feeling well today, Steve. You seem to only slept 4 hours last night. Why were you getting up at 3?
Well, that's it. And then that dials into the insurance company. And the insurance company sees that you consumed that Coca-Cola and yes. decided to sleep this many hours. And they... can charge you appropriately for your obesity and for your medical needs as someone who's not getting enough rest.
No more will you tell us that you drive less than 10,000 miles a year.
Right?
We will know that you drove exactly 15,223.
That's right.
And we'll just charge you per mile.
Anonymously.
Anonymously. Somebody using your phone that could have been you and may not have been you.
Right.
Who happened to arrive at work just a few minutes early every single morning. That, you know.
That's right.
Where we know that the lights changed a certain time. Interestingly enough, you seem to have a heavy lead foot. Or somebody.
Well.
Who could be you.
This will completely get rid of the need for all of those speed cameras. And the red light cameras, you have in your pocket the sensor that is telling the authorities where you were and at what time.
Well, in fact, we have a few more minutes? Or,
sure.
You have an automatic, right, in your car?
I do have an automatic in my car.
This brings us to
our discussion of the Internet of Things, because we are two people who are working on the Internet of Things. You have your Nest thermostat.
Yeah.
I have my Nest Protect smoke alarm.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
Did you see the price just went down? It went down $99 from what were they $129 before?
They were $129 before. They went down to $99 because they removed the one and only thing that I purchased the unit for, which was the ability to wave at it to shut it off.
They took it away.
They disabled that in all the units around the world.
Oh, good grief!
So
good grief.
Thank you, Google. Thank you for protecting me.
Well, now it only, you know, from $129 to $99, it'll only take you about $1,200. Because on these relatively new houses, you've got to have a smoke detector in like every moment, every place in the house.
Right. It's, yeah. But the Internet of Things, I also just put in a Internet of Things device on my garage door opener.
Oh, what was
that? So the Chamberlain garage door opener that now has an Internet device that I can operate from my smartphone. And the promise of all of the Internet of Things is that everything can talk to everything else. When my automatic in my car... says, I am traveling toward my home, I'm within a mile or two of my home, the odds are I'm going to stop at home if mm-hmm. I'm driving toward my home and a mile away. That could, through my smartphone, send a signal to my Nest thermostat to turn on the furnace.
Uh-huh.
My smoke alarm probably won't be involved in this conversation.
The coffee will be ready when you walk in.
The coffee will be ready when I walk in the door.
The Keurig.
That's right. And the Chamberlain garage door opener could sense that my phone or my car happened to be a certain distance away and could open the garage door.
The local pizza place could have the pizza arrive as you're coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, or more likely the personal trainer could show up.
Exactly.
And
of course.
Stop the pizza man and explain to them how they should stop coming around here.
The personal trainer will come in to log in that he was here, or right. She was here.
Right. Straight to the insurance company.
Amazing.
Right.
You arrived, and your workout was the first 20 minutes while you were here.
Right.
Yes, it was.
Yes,
of course
it was.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. The Internet of Things is really something that we've thought was going to happen, and certainly is going to happen. The more sensors we have all around us, the more these things can communicate with each other, I think the better off we're all going to be.
I will agree with you. And the trick is going to be, it's not today, it's going to be 20 years from now when everything is much more affordable. Mm-hmm. As far as how, you know, when you test a Nest out, you're paying a premium to test it out. There's no doubt. In fact, ComEd gave me $100 to try to switch over to a Nest, and then they give me another $40 at the end of the summer. So they basically are saying, listen, we want to monitor you. We want to test some ideas, probably mm-hmm. metadata ideas. And if you're willing to allow us to know who you are.
Anonymously.
We will give you these benefits.
So you have to give them your address so they can send you the unit and your bank account so that they can give you the refund, but they still don't know who you are.
They don't know who you are. No, they don't. But they may. They may be able to put two and two. They're the worst detectives ever. That's what they do. We just fumble it. They're Sherlock Holmes, and we're just the total opposite. Well, the automatic is very interesting. Because you plug it into your automobile.
Correct.
And it gives you a score. So what is it trying to do? It's giving you a positive feedback that you're driving great.
Mm-hmm.
Or that you're stopping quickly, or you're speeding up too quickly. If you were in an accident, what it would end up doing is calling your loved ones, basically say, you know, your husband just passed away. We thought we'd like to let you know that.
The car has called your wife to tell you, Kit, stop calling my wife.
We want to tell you your husband's no longer here. Please accept our condolences.
I'll be back in the garage in a few minutes.
That's right. Right. You can come up and you can pick up his things at this funeral home. No. We've already got him in a bottle, ready to, and we got him in an urn. Now it's very interesting because it also reads the codes. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that the Internet of Things could do real well for you is it's unlocking the mystery of stuff.
Absolutely.
Now, it doesn't make you wise, but all of a sudden, you're understanding what it is. And if you understand that, oh, it's this part of my car that's malfunctioning,
mm-hmm.
going to the internet and looking it up or going to your brand new Bible on how to repair something, YouTube,
mm-hmm.
Another Google. And they'll know exactly when you go there. You'll be anonymous, but they'll know exactly when you're there. But anyway, if you can go there and you can learn a little bit about whatever your problem is,
mm-hmm.
to arm yourself when you go in to talk to somebody. So if you're talking about, I don't know, part A, that it could be, because that's what the code says it could be, and they're talking about something totally different, then you have two choices. The person's lying to you, or you don't have enough knowledge, you need to go and kind of research it. And so it doesn't mean you have to, you can personally fix everything. Maybe you can, but maybe you can troubleshoot before going to that person.
A little bit of knowledge helping you out. That's the Internet of Things.
Oh, and it saves time. It makes you a smarter consumer. And you recognize what your limitations are,
mm-hmm.
And what you want to do versus what you're willing to pay someone else.
And what you're capable of doing before you take apart the car and try to figure out what's wrong with it. That's a good idea.
Apart and put it back together. And, well, you hit on so much of it. many of those things. But anyway, I've truly enjoyed the automatic. Someone asked me if I should if you should purchase one. I enjoyed it because I get the information, and the information is provided to me only.
Correct.
That's the agreement between you and automatic. There are many insurance companies who are also testing this, but at that point you're sharing that information with the insurance company, which may or may not be a good idea.
Right.
Yeah. The good idea would be, listen, if you're willing to share that information, we're willing to give you a discount. And that may be something that's truly worthwhile, because if your insurance dropped half or a third or whatever, they would learn about your driving skill.
Rewarding that safe driver.
And they may be able to say, listen, you're not a good driver. We want you to go to the school.
And improve.
Correct. Or it could be so many, many things. But it also could be used against you. And, of course, you would never... I would never drive anyway, but the most safe way possible, totally within the laws, never deviating it out at any point to put any person ever at risk. But if somebody could, and if they did, well, that information could be damaging to you. And we won't, well, that could be changed in the future too, when we have self-driving cars and all that.
Well, that's a topic for another episode, I'm sure.
Rock and roll.
We can get to that. Well, it's been interesting. It's been fun. Thank you very much for coming in and having our first podcast.
That's right.
Thank you for listening. Too Much Scrolling. If you want to contact us, our email address is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our Twitter page is Much Scrolling, because too much scrolling is apparently too much for Twitter. And our Facebook page is Too Much Scrolling. Tune in next time. We'll talk about some more fun things and see you in the future.